Good morning, Rabotai. We're going to be studying Parashat Tazria, also connected to our Eshet Hayil classes. And we're going to be finishing up today the subject of Shalom that we've been learning the past few weeks. The Pasuk in the beginning of the Parashat of Tazria discusses a very familiar mitzvah that we have, one of the great mitzvot of Am Yisrael, something that actually defines who a Jew is. The Pasuk says that when a woman gives birth to a baby boy, Ubayom Hashemini, the Pasuk says, Yimol Besar Orlato, that on the eighth day, we must cut the foreskin on his body. This is the mitzvah of Berit Milah that we're all very familiar with and defines us as a people. This mitzvah has tremendous amount of significance. One of the essential mitzvot of a Jew, It obviously carries with it tremendous amount of significance. One of, if not the main point of the Brit Milah, is that we come into this world and we are physically not perfect. In fact, famous conversation took place a few thousand years ago between a Roman and Rabbi Akiva. The Roman was, the name is Turnus Rufus. He asked Rabbi Akiva almost, it was a question, or maybe he was mocking him, that since, as you say, that your creator or the creator is kol yachol, is able to do anything and everything he wants, if he indeed wants you, if he wanted that the person should cut his foreskin or it should be cut, he could have done it himself. So by you going and cutting the Brit Milah, you're actually going against his wishes. Being that he created a person and he decided to leave the foreskin, by you cutting it is going against him, because he could do it himself if he wants to. And if he decided not to do it, you know, in life, usually we help people who can't help themselves. If a person could help himself and decides not to, he must have a reason. If he has a reason, especially if he's a wise person, if he has a reason why he didn't do something, it would not be appropriate to go and do it for him because he had the choice and decided not to. So the creator is fully capable of creating a perfect body. As if indeed removing the foreskin makes you perfect, and he decided not to make it perfect, so obviously he doesn't want to. If he doesn't want to, you doing it would be going against his wishes. Nice, very nice formula. There was a similar question that he asked about the mitzvah of charity. There it wasn't about the creation of the person. Here was a little more, perhaps a little more depth, in that not only does God create the person, but we also live our lives as Jews, that he's involved in our lives. Every moment of our lives, he is surveilling and taking care of whatever needs to happen. We call that Ashgaha Peratit. Very personal, down to the single individual. Hashem is watching and running the world for each individual, says Turnus Rufus. So why would you guys give charity to those who are needy? Isn't the Creator capable of giving needy people food and money, certainly, you know, he's capable. He's involved in everything. If he's capable and he didn't give them, so clearly he doesn't want them to have. If he doesn't want them to have, you giving charity is going against his wishes. He wanted them not to have. And you're going against him and making it happen. Rabbi Akiva told him that the mitzvot that we have are there to purify us. The mitzvot that we have is for us, not for him. Which means, from the Romans' eyes, he understood that when we do service to God, which unfortunately many people fall in that trap because they hear the word service and they hear the word servant. So the only example they have of service is when people help each other. So when we serve God, as they've been hearing since they were 2 years old, so automatically in their mind, they imagine that we're helping the Creator. We're helping Him fix the world. We're helping Him by giving Him things. We're helping Him by doing things for us. That's the way the Goy understood, that we're here to help the Creator. So when we do something that He wants us to do, we're doing it for Him. In that mindset, he couldn't understand why you would help him in things he doesn't want to be done, because he could have done it himself. That's what he saw. Unfortunately, like I said, many people see it that way in one way or another. Rabbi Akiva explained to him that's not the way the world runs. The opposite. Hashem sacrifices for us so that we will be able to achieve our perfection. Hashem specifically made our body not perfect, so that we will be able to perfect ourselves, to make ourselves shalem, complete. Hashem specifically made people need things, because that will make those who give them shalem, complete. It's not by accident that there are people who need things in life. In reality, we all need each other in life. Sometimes we only view the person who has no money, and we think that's like the need, and Hazit the guy who needs money. But in reality, we all need each other so much of the time. When a person makes a wedding, he cannot enjoy a wedding by himself. So he needs people to come and strengthen his simcha. It's not possible to elevate the simcha like we have at a wedding with the person by himself. So if I'm making a wedding for my son or my daughter or for myself, I need people to come. We don't look at that as needy. We think, oh, the needy guy is the guy, Hazikes, that he has a problem, he can't pay the bills, he can't put food on the table. It's also a needy guy. But we, all of us, are needy on many levels. Every time you send an invitation to a simcha in your family, you're like the poor guy. Baruch Hashem, it's a nice thing that you're celebrating. It's a need of happiness. But it's a need nonetheless. You're basically telling people, I need you. Please come and raise my happiness with your presence. That's really what we are doing when we send an invitation to a wedding. The invitation is not, since I'm having a party, so I want you to enjoy yourself and I'm going to make you food and drinks, so come enjoy. That's not what the invitation is for. The invitation is, I need you. We don't like to say it like that because it looks like we need people. We don't like to need anybody. We like to feel like we're totally on our own. We are independent. I don't need anyone, because it feels a little humbling to need people. But in reality, if we're honest with ourselves, we need people all the time. Kol Sheken, a person is an avelut. Lo alenu velo alechem. A person's avelut. You can't sit avelut by yourself. You need people to visit you. You need strength. A person is young. Every single person that's born needs tremendous amount of charity. Tremendous. I don't care which home he was born into. He needs charity till none. Every single person listening here, every person here in this room was a very, very big ani when they came into the world. They needed help in everything, in every area. And that continued for many years. It started very, very, very bad, very needy. And then we got a little better. Even teenagers need help. And then as the world goes, when a person gets older, usually you go back there again. Again, you need people. You need people to come talk to you. You need people to help you. You need people to take you to the doctor. You need doctors to help you get better. And in between, there are plenty of things that we need each other. We need each other's company. We need each other's smile. We need wisdom from people. It's to learn from people. There are many, many. We need loans. Even wealthy people need loans. There's no end to the amount of needs that a person has in his life. Again, somehow we camouflage them and we don't realize that we are needy of others, but we are. This is not accidental. This is part of the great plan of the Creator. It was a great sacrifice of the Creator to make people imperfect. He is perfect. Everything he makes should be perfect. So it was a great sacrifice for him that people have all these imperfections, whether they're physical needs or spiritual needs. People are jealous. That's not perfect to be jealous. People are selfish. That's not perfect to be selfish. Hashem created all kinds of imperfections in the body and in the soul and in the everyday life of a person. That was a very big sacrifice from the Creator's part, because someone of his stature should never be accused of making something imperfect. Here you have the conversations that we mentioned above, and so many people in today's world look around, you'll hear people complain about the imperfections that exist in the world. People fighting wars, people killing each other, all kinds of diseases, all kinds of issues, all kinds of anger, all kinds of drugs, all kinds of people hurting them. It's all called imperfect. A person would look at this world and say, who created this world? Why would he? Look at that situation. Look what's going on in that guy's life. So many different issues that we find in the world. That's a very big sacrifice from the Creator, who can make everything perfect, and yet he decided to put himself out there and have people complain about his creation and make things imperfect. And the reason why he did it is that that is the purpose of our lives. The purpose of our lives in this world is to make ourselves perfect. Otherwise, we would be a robot of somebody else's perfection. If Hashem created us perfect, it would be to his credit and his achievement. But we are here to achieve perfection. And therefore, the opportunities of life are endless in this area. And that is the essence of a Jew. That is why the Brit Milah is considered one of the great mitzvot of a Jew, that every Jew in the world knows it's a sign of being a Jew. Because the Brit Milah is a very big announcement that the Creator of the world made me on purpose imperfect because he wants me to perfect myself. And I do one mitzvah on my body to remind me for life that this is a constant theme of my existence, that I look at myself and I need to perfect myself. I need to upgrade myself. That's why we speak constantly about growth. Because if a person is not growing in life, he is wasting his existence. His existence calls for a constant look at his at himself and constantly raising the bar. Take a selfish child, constantly raising the bar. The guy who says, "No, I'm good. This is who I am." That's anti-Jewish. Anti-Jewish is the guy who says, "This is who I am. Take it or leave it." It's the equal of a two-year-old that says, "This is who I am. Take it or leave it." Parents want to send them to school. "No, no, this is who I am. Take it or leave it." You know, you got to learn. You got to do. You got to... "This is who I am." I think we would be very sad to see a two-year-old happy with his two-year-old existence, knowing there's so much more that he could achieve in his life. Same it is for 20-year-olds also. 20, 30, 40, 50, 60-year-olds. It's all the same. Anybody. When we look at people who are satisfied with where they are in life and not raising the bar, it's something sad to look at. If you would know what that person is capable of, you'd be sad for him. You don't want to be angry with him, you'd be sad for him. Because he could do so much more in his life. And Hashem brought us into this world with many issues. We're selfish, we're jealous. We have all kinds of imperfections. And our goal is to keep rising, to keep going, to infuse ourselves with more wisdom, with more clarity, with more beautiful character. And Hashem gives us ample opportunities. And this is where real shalom, the last class we're going to have on shalom is today. We certainly have not finished the subject, but today is going to be our last class. That the real centerpiece, the real beauty of shalom, the essence of shalom, is when a person realizes that not only is he here to make himself perfect, but he's here to make the people around him shalom. That is the ultimate shalom. There are levels of shalom. As we mentioned, people who don't fight, that's nice, no conflict. That's a lower level shalom. And there are people who do their own things, but somehow they connect to each other once in a while, like partners who are running their own areas and they kind of do their own thing, and then somehow it makes a company, it makes some sort of great ending. And then there are people who are constantly looking for opportunities to make others whole. That is the ultimate shalom. The ultimate shalom is when you realize that where Hashem put you in life, wherever He put you, He definitely chose your home, that's for sure. And then after that, Hashem is mezaveg zivugim, meaning Hashem is constantly involved in making connections. It's not only in marriage, zivugim. Zivugim means every person that you're, when you went to your parents' home, that was a zivug. When you met your brother and sister, that's a zivug. It's a reason why they're related to you. Your cousins are a zivug. The place you went to school, and all of a sudden, in your grade, there were these people. Zivug. You know, it's interesting. If you would see in schools, you would realize something amazing. That every grade has its certain unique personality. And Hashem puts like the right people for that grade. It's so interesting. You think you got it. This is the grade. Next year we'll do the same thing. It's never the same. Every grade has its own look and has its own... It's unbelievable. Hashem is mezaveg zivugim. It's not accidental you went to school with the guy. And all of life is mezaveg zivugim. All of life Hashem is putting you with people. It could be a moment. It could be something much more involved, maybe in time or in effort. And we, as people who strive for shalom, must view the world with a new lens besides perfecting ourselves. If Hashem put you in life in a certain home, your job is to perfect the people in that home. One time a young man told me he was having some issues with his family. He was a more of a serious type of person, and he was growing in Torah and mitzvot. And of course, one of the great moments for a Jew that elevates him is Shabbat. And the Shabbat table is one of the great moments for a Jew during the week. It elevates not only the moment, but it elevates the entire week. So this young man looks forward to his Shabbat. A problem that he has is he lives by his parents, and his parents and the home that he's in are not so observant. They have a Shabbat meal, they have a table, but it's not the kind of table he's looking to be on. You know, different discussions, mundane discussions, maybe talking a little bit about people, all different things that are not what a Shabbat table is supposed to look like. He wants to have more wholesome conversations. He wants to have, wants to say over something, a nice idea of Torah, of wisdom. He wants to sing a couple of songs. That's what he's looking for. And it's very frustrating sitting on the table week after week with the environment of looseness and letzanut, making fun of things. So, this is not an uncommon problem that happens. So he spoke to me about what he needs to do. His solution was basically that he feels he needs just to eat somewhere else because he found no way to solve this problem. So I don't know him that well, to be honest. But I told him, I don't know what your solution is. I said, I don't know what the solution is. We would need to talk a lot more time for me to understand the dynamics of your relationship and how things could change. So I don't know the answer. I said, but I will tell you one thing, that no matter the solution, the fact that these people are your family is not accidental. And you have a responsibility that these people will enjoy their Shabbat table the way you want to enjoy it. I don't know how you're going to do it, but whatever you do, never forget, you can't run away from your responsibility. So how to fulfill it? That's not today's conversation, but it's not accidental. Sometimes people feel, why do I get stuck with this? Now, it could be a Shabbat Friday night issue. It could be a health issue with a family member. It could be many different issues that a person, sometimes a child is born into a family and they're not so easy to take care of. Sometimes a special needs child. The endless issues in life where a person says to himself, when did I sign up for this? You hear people say that? I didn't sign up for this. That is one of the dumbest lines that any human could say. It's really like, it's just silly. Of course, I don't mean the person is dumb, but it's a dumb line. It's really very silly to make such statements. I didn't sign up. What are you talking about? Did you sign up to be created? Did you sign up to go to your father's home? Did you sign up to be born to your mother? Did you sign up to know what your name is going to be? Since when does life and all of its ongoings need a sign-up sheet? It's not the way life works. You know, you're smarter than that. We don't sign up for things. We are given projects. We're given certain certain missions in life. We're given assignments. Imagine the kids in first grade and the teacher gives an assignment. So I didn't sign up for this. They tell him, Rahi, you didn't sign up for school. Somebody else signed you in. So you just have to, you keep going. Why do I have this difficult situation? Why do I have this difficult person in my life? Why do I? And I'm not giving you all the answers, because sometimes the answers need a lot of time and thought. And sometimes the answer is to be a little separate. But never ever think that it's accidental where you are in life and what you've been given. It's a zivug. Hashem made people come together. And one of the goals of a zivug, usually, the goal of a zivug is how you're going to live with shalom with that person. Meaning, not how do you not fight with him. That's a low-level achievement. The real achievement is how do you make that person complete? Sometimes it could be physical. Sometimes it could be spiritual. Sometimes it could be whatever, emotional. There's a way to make people shalem. Every guy you see walking down the street, that's a zivug. You see a guy in shul for a split second, that's a zivug. Hashem is making zivug all day long. And when there's someone in your life, you need to think with a mind of shalom, of shlemut. That's one of the translations of shalom aleichem. That is the mission of a great person in this world. As we climb the ladder, that's what we're going to find. We're going to find the person who's out there looking at every zivug and trying to see what they can do to make that person's life more whole. Either a happier person, or maybe they need something physically or monetarily, or they need advice, or they just need someone to be with them, whatever it might be. To strengthen this point, you need to hear this. It might surprise you. We are all familiar, very familiar, with the story of Purim. We're all familiar with the Megillat Esther and the story that started with Ahasuerus and then Haman and ended up with Mordechai. The decree, the salvation, everybody here knows the Megillah. Who wrote the Megillah? The Megillah that we read, that we say. One word you can't miss. Who wrote that Megillah? Pasuk. So the Megillah itself signs off with the author. It says, Vatichtov Esther Hamalka Bat Avihail Umordechai Yehudi. Mordechai and Esther, they wrote what they call us Igeret HaPurim Azot HaShenit. Beautiful, very nice. They wrote the Megillah Esther. Nice to know. It's always good to know who the author of whatever you're reading. It's a good thing to always keep in mind. In today's world, it's a very big issue. Today, the information is so, it's all over the place. And because it's in print, it almost feels authentic. There's a lot of fake information out there, a lot. Either it's not precise or it's fake altogether. And AI is one of the major spreading of false information. Anyway, before you read something, teach yourself. That's one of the great things of learning Gemara. Teach yourself. Before you read something, who said it? Who is this? Where did he get it from? Don't be fooled by words that look nice or feel nice. Anyway, it's good to know when you write something, sign your name. I wrote it, so at least you know who you read. And then it says, Vayishlach sefarim el kol ha-yehudim. Listen to this. So they sent these books to the Jewish people in all the countries of Ahasuerus. Divrei, what's in these books? Divrei, they were words of shalom and emet. They sent words of shalom and words of emet. Comes the Gaon Mevilna in his Perush on Masechet Megillah and on Sefer on Megillah Esther, excuse me. And he says, Divrei Shalom. What is Divrei Shalom? Words of Shalom. Says the Gaon, He HaMegillah Sheshalhu. The Divrei Shalom is describing Megillat Esther. So if someone reads Megillat Esther and someone comes over to him and says, tell me, what did you read? Could you like sum it up in a couple of words? What was it all about? Who would have imagined that the authors of Megillat Esther, from all the things that you know about the Megillah, that they would describe Megillat Esther is words of shalom. What shalom? There's so many themes that we could come up with describing Megillat Esther without even being learned. So obvious, the different messages of Megillat Esther. None of them would say Divrei Shalom. And what's Emet? Says the Gaon, the Emet is the Torah. Okay, they accepted the Torah with love. Okay, leave that. So now, from now on, we learned, whenever you pick up Megillat Esther, you're picking up not Divrei Yeshua, not the love Hashem has for our people, not the greatness of Mordechai, not that tefillah is important, all those things and more. No. The essence, Divrei Shalom. And now we have to scratch our heads and try to figure out where in this Megillah do you see Shalom altogether? Forget that it's not the theme. Where is it altogether? Where is Shalom in the Megillah? Were there Shalom Bayit issues that we took care of? But if Mordechai and Esther, the authors, wrote that, so obviously, we're missing something. Obviously, the story is the story. But they're trying to tell you something. They're trying to tell you that the story of Purim and all of what you learned on the surface, and you were happy just learning the story, but they wanted to tell you what was in the back office. See, in life, very often we see success either by people or by situations. But we don't know the back office. We don't know how that happened. And when you only see the external, you try to copy it, but it doesn't work. You see a guy doing ABC and you see, wow, that was successful. But you didn't see all the thing he's doing underground. So when you read Megillat Esther, you're going to see tremendous success. But they were worried that you're not going to know how that came about. And this is the message of Mordechai and Esther. You want to know how Purim happened? So that Purim can happen in your life? We also have decrees. And we also need Yeshua, salvation. We also need everything that we read about in Puri. Oh, don't just read the story. Divrei Shalom. The vehicle of Purim's success, which could be our success, is Shalom. Where do you see Shalom in Megillat Esther? So first of all, before I tell you where you see Shalom, it's important to know the words of David HaMelech regarding Shalom. He says, Sur mera va'aseh tov. Let me give you a life mission. Stay away from bad and do good. Nice. Bakesh Shalom. Bakesh Shalom means you have to go seek Shalom. You have to take the opportunities and run after it. Megillat Esther begins with Mordechai, as the Pasuk says, after we're introduced to him, Ish Yehudi, there was this Jewish man in Shushan, his name is Mordechai. Asher Hoglam Yerushalayim. He voluntarily, on his own, went into exile. He was from the Gedolei Hador, the greatest of the generation. Why would he voluntarily, as I'll tell us, shegalam me'atzmo, on his own, nobody threw him out of his house, no one threw him out of his city. Why would someone like Mordechai voluntarily leave his home and his city, Yerushalayim? Why would he do that? But that's what it says. Asher hoglam Yerushalayim. He decided to go into self-exile. Oh. Why did he do it? Next pasuk. Vayhi omen et hadasa. He raised his cousin. Her name was Hadasa, who is Esther. He Esther. Batodo. The daughter of his uncle. Why did he go into exile? Ki en la aba evin. She had no father, she had no mother, they passed away. So if your cousin who lives in Shushan passes away, the parents pass away, and your cousin is there by themselves, and you're the Gadol Ador in Yerushalayim, okay, I mean, we've all had situations in life where we hear unfortunate stories. What would I do in that situation? Okay, it's terrible. Can't believe it. Horrible. Send a check. Send some money. Send somebody, if you're able to, maybe appoint somebody in the city to take them as an orphan. Maybe put them in an orphanage. Send it to you. Or send it to you. The man realizes this is his zivug. He's the closest person to this young lady that can help. And he took that as an assignment from the Creator. He doesn't go to every orphan to move. That's not necessarily his assignment. Not every orphan is my assignment. But in this situation, you're the closest to this girl. That's not accidental. That your first cousin, who happens to be the closest relative to her, is you. That's not an accident. That's a zivuk. And now she needs somebody to raise up. I'm not talking. I know that this would be an impossible task for any of us. To pick up and leave our city and our home and relocate to take care of a cousin whose unfortunate fate was that her parents are no longer around. I mean, we feel terrible. We want to help. But to help in such a over-the-top type of way is beyond our imagination. Where does that come from? It comes from a person who's mevakesh shalom. Mevakesh Shalom means he's always looking to see where he can be useful to bring Shlemut to others that is given to him as an assignment. I don't expect anybody to walk out of this class, certainly not me, and I'm sure I speak for all of us. I don't think we're on the level that we're going to pick up and leave to take care of a cousin instead of giving her help from far, which would be beautiful. If we did that, that would already be great. Sent them a check every month, called someone to take him in. That would be beautiful. In our world today, they would sneak him at the guy for, I don't know how long. What the guy did for his cousin, doesn't even know how. Great. Who's picking up to move there? I don't think in our world anyone's doing that. But sometimes from the extreme, you could learn at least about the more common and things that we're capable of. How about the people in your house? The people in your city, people in your family. The eye that sees the need to make people shalem maybe can't go so far for us, but it could be local. That's how the story of Purim took place. It started. They wrote this on purpose. He wasn't writing this to tell us how great he is. He was telling us, you know, the success of Mordechai. You understand what happened to him? And all the Jewish people's Yeshua, you know where it came from? Right here. It came from a person who's Mevakesh Shalom. And then, continue. As you read the Megillah, you see Mordechai do something very strange. So Esther is taken to this magnificent spa for all the ladies that are waiting their turn to see if they will be chosen by Ahasuerus as the new queen. And she's a contestant. And they put her in this magnificent place for women. It's a woman's dream. And the Pasuk says, Ubchol yom vayom. Every single day, Mordechai mitalech lifne hatzar bet anashim. Every day, he would go in the courtyard of this building, of this complex. Every day. Every day means every day. Every single day. Mordechai, the Gadol Hador, is walking, mitalech, not just walking there, mitalech, is spending time there. He's walking back and forth by this complex where the women are staying at. Why? You got nothing better to do, Mordechai? Why are you going there every day? Lada'at et shalom Esther, so he can know the shalom of Esther, umaye aseba, and what will be done to her. And the question is, what exactly was he worried about? No woman in the world is as safe and taken care of than the woman who is being prepared for the king. It's the safest complex. Nobody's touching her, that's for sure. And she's going to be given full care. What exactly could be wrong that you need to go check how she's doing? How is she doing? Doing great. Maybe she doesn't want to be there. She's doing great. Umaye aseba, and what's going to happen to her? What does that mean, what's going to happen to her? You mean if they're going to choose her? That's not the words. Maye aseba. You should ask what the king is going to decide, what the decision will be. Not maye aseba. Ye aseba sounds like she's like some sort of a book that you're trying to see what they're going to do with it. What's going to happen to it? And the answer is that Mordechai knew that Esther is suffering in this complex. She wants nothing to do with these people. A woman's dream, maybe, but not for her. For her, it's a place of Gehinnom to be around such vanity and such people. Just imagine the people there. Imagine what was going on there. They were trying to spoil them. Esther had suffering over there. That's called Shalom Esther. So tell me, how did he help her? By walking and pacing back and forth. It doesn't say he even went into the building. Notice, it says, Lifne Hatzar Bet Hanashim. In front of the courtyard. He didn't even go to the courtyard. He didn't go into the building. He's pacing outside the courtyard of the building of where Esther is. So tell me, you worried about her? Very nice. So what are you doing? You know, sometimes you can worry about people, but you're not doing anything. I worry about you and therefore I did A. What does A have to do with my issue? Not always do you do something that's going to help the issue. Okay, you're right. You have a woman who's stuck in a place she doesn't want to be. She's probably fighting them. She's probably arguing with them. What are you doing by pacing? Here's another unbelievable piece of shalom. Sometimes in helping people, you can't do anything except tell them that you want to help them, but you can't. Sometimes that's what brings them shlemut. Sometimes in life we put ourselves or we find ourselves in situations that we really can't do anything. We don't have the money to help. We're not doctors, and even if we are doctors, there's nothing to do. There's no way to help people, at least from the way you see it, there's nothing to do. Now what? Now there's something called, I'm going to do the maximum to show you that I'm thinking about your pain. That's all this accomplished. And how often? Every day. Every day. Walking back and forth. He can't talk to her. She can't talk to him. They're far away from each other. And the goal is that she should see someone who's thinking about her. That makes her more whole. We call that in Hebrew, Noseh be'ol al havero. You're carrying the load. Imagine there's a person who's pushing a carriage uphill to the top of a mountain. It's very hard to get up there. Someone comes and helps them push it up. It makes it lighter. This is called shalom. Making other people's issues lighter, you're making them more complete. Umaye aseba. He was worried they might kill her. So again, he wanted to give, to be there. Maybe he would be able to save her. Maybe he would be just to be present. Who knows what could happen? There's one more example of shalom in the Megillah. Very, very innocent story, simple story. Story of Biktan Bateresh. These two men that were trying to poison the king. And it says that Mordechai, Vayivvada ad davar le Mordechai. Mordechai found out what they were trying to do. Listen to these words. Vayaged le Esther Amalka. Vayaged means he said over what he found out to Esther. Vatomer Esther lamelech b'shem Mordechai. And Esther went to the king and she told him in the name of Mordechai. Notice the difference between when he told Esther and when she told the king. When Mordechai told Esther, it says vayaged, like magid. Vehigata lebincha. When she told Ahashverosh, it says vatomer, and she said, what's the difference between vayaged and vatomer? The answer is, the word vayaged is telling over a story, like we do in night of Pesach. Magid, Tell over the story. You see, when Mordechai told Esther, he didn't tell her so she could tell the king. He told her the story to tell her so that she can go to the king and get full credit for her story without saying who she heard it from. He told her the story so that she could tell over the story herself. But when she came, she said it over. She just said what Mordechai told her. Because she didn't want the credit. She wanted Mordechai to get the credit. That's called a relationship of shalom. Unlike a home where a husband and wife each one say, who does more for the other? Who gets more credit in this home? That's usually what you see, or certainly what they feel. I bring to this home A, B, C, D, E. I mean, nowhere close to what you do. And this is an argument. Who does more for this home? Who gets more credit? I get more credit. A relationship of shalom is where a person, actually in a close relationship, wants the other one to feel more complete, which means that they should feel like they're the ones who are doing more. Imagine going home and telling your spouse, I don't know. I'm not even like a candle next to you. You're like a torch compared to my candle for all that you do for this relationship. People might be scared to do that. What's going to happen? She's going to start asking me for more things. She's going to start using that against me. That's what we think. It's not true. It's not what happens. When you make someone a torch, they will start giving more light to you. When you tell someone how much they do more, not less. It's all Yetzer Hara. Tells you, oh no, you can't make her feel like she's doing everything because you're not thinking in the world of wisdom. The more you show people how much they do, the more they want to do. Tell your spouse how much they're doing for you, they'll want to do double. That's called shalom. Shalom is going into your home and thinking how to make them feel more complete by making them feel how much they're doing. That they're doing more than you, not you doing more than them. Opposite, everything opposite of what people are normally doing. That's called an act of shalom. They wrote that in the Megillah. They didn't forget to write this in the Megillah because they want to tell you where the beracha comes in a person's life. Vayhi omen et hadasa. You know where the beracha comes in life? When you see someone in need in your family, you give up of your home to go and make them complete. It means helping people become complete, even if you have nothing to do, just to show them that you want to help them, that you're feeling their pain. That's called shalom. It's going into your home, into your relationships, and saying, I don't know how you do everything. I wish I could do as much as you do for our family. And on, not just with a wife, in general, to make people feel more shalem in their accomplishments. And that's why, at the end of Megillat Esther, you'll see the most beautiful words, when it describes Mordechai. It says, Ki Mordechai Yehudi. Last pasuk in Megillat Esther. This is like the takeaway. The takeaway is Haman now. Ahasuerus now. What's the takeaway? Ki Mordechai Yehudi. Mishne Lamelech Ahasuerus. He is second to the king Ahasuerus. Nice. Ve'gadol LaYehudim is a great man amongst the Jewish people. Ve'ratzui L'rov Ehav. Most people are very happy with him. Great. Tremendous, tremendous accomplishment, all this. Okay? That's it, period. That's it.
Dori.
No. He's telling you. Okay, so how does that happen? Doresh tov le'amo. He's constantly doresh. He's looking where he could do good to people who need him. That's called bakesh shalom. He's mevakesh. He's looking, not waiting. It would be nice if he helped people who came to him. But he did more than that. He went doresh tov. He's constantly looking to see where he can make a mark. Not only a check, but any kind of mark he can make in people's lives. Doresh tov. He's looking for the opportunities. He's looking for the zivug. He's looking for the connection that Hashem put in front of him. He's looking for it. Doresh tov. I don't know if he could do this everywhere, but at least in the home we could do it. At least with our close friendships. Doresh tov le'amo. Mordechai was a man who saw himself as a person who can bring shlemut to this entire nation when the opportunity presents himself. And the last words of Megillat Esther. Vedover shalom lekol zar'o. He was a man who spoke shalom. He spoke the language of shalom. He lived the language of shalom. This is Megillat Esther. Megillat Esther is shalom. The salvation of our Megillat Esther, of your Megillat Esther, of my Megillat Esther. This is not a story that once happened. So I try to tell you, this is a measurement of great stories. It's the back office of great stories, of great people. When you're out there bringing shalom, bringing shlemut, bringing perfection to people's lives, it's going to require some sacrifice. You're going to have to lower your ego a little bit. But the results are magnificent. Take each and every one of us, get tremendous hezuk to take on as a life mission, to be that person. That whenever I go into my home, my number one goal is doresh tov. How can I do good for my wife, for my children? How can I make them more perfect? Maybe a compliment, maybe a gift, maybe this, maybe that. Whatever it might be. If that is the new way of looking at my relationships, I'm on my way to the salvation of Purim in my life. I'm on my way to a great story called Megillat Meir. Or Megillat Yehuda, or Megillat Avraham. It's not only Esther. Hashem has a system of how he runs his world. And those who are Rodef Shalom, Mevakesh Shalom, those are the people that are going to have tremendous beracha in their existence and in their life. Have a wonderful day.